Chapter 5. Elderly gentleman in the richest traveling dress, with one of the new French toupets, a thin wrinkled painted face, and emitting with every movement a prodigious odor of millefleurs. This visitor, who was attended by his French barber and two or three liveried servants, the Marquess introduced as the Lord of Valdu, a neighboring seigneury of no great account. Though his lands marched with the Marquess's, it was years since the Count had visited Donna's, being one of the King's chamberlains, and always in attendance on His Majesty, and it was amazing to see with what smirks and grimaces, and ejaculations in Piedmontese French, he complimented the Marchioness on her appearance, and exclaimed at the magnificence of the castle, which must doubtless have appeared to him little better than a cattle grange. His talk was unintelligible to Odo, but there was no mistaking the nature of the glances he fixed on Donna Laura, who, having fled to her room on his approach, presently descended in a ravishing new sack, with an air of extreme surprise, and her hair curled, as Odo afterward learned, by the Count's own barber. Odo had never seen his mother look handsomer. She sparkled at the Count's compliments, embraced her father, playfully readjusted her mother's coif, and in the prettiest way made their excuses to the Count for the cold draughts and bare floors of the castle. "Ever having lived at court myself," said she, "I know to what your excellency is accustomed, and can the better value your condescension in exposing yourself, at this rigorous season, to the hardships of our mountaintop." The Marquess at this began to look black, but seeing the Count's pleasure in the compliment, contented himself with calling out for dinner, which, said he, with all respect to their visitor, would stay his stomach better than the French kickshaws at His Majesty's table. Whether the Count was of the same mind, it was impossible to say, though Odo could not help observing that the stewed venison and spiced boar's flesh seemed to present certain obstacles either to his jaws or his palate, and that his appetite lingered on the fried chicken livers and tunny fish in oil. But he cast such looks at Donna Laura as seemed to declare that for her sake he would willingly have risked his teeth on the very cobblestones of the court. Knowing how she pined for company, Odo was not surprised at his mother's complaisance, yet wondered to see the smile with which she presently received the Count's half-bantering disparagement of Pianura. For the duchy, by his showing, was a place of small consequence, an asylum of superannuated fashions, whereas no Frenchman of quality ever visited Turin without exclaiming on its resemblance to Paris, and vowing that none who had the entree of Stupenigai need cross the Alps to see Versailles. As to the Marquess's depriving the court of Donna Laura's presence, their guest protested against it as an act of overt disloyalty to the sovereign. And what most surprised Odo, who had often heard his grandfather declaim against the Count as a cheap jackanapes that hung about the court for what he could make at play, was the indulgence with which the Marquess received his visitor's sallies. Father and daughter in fact vied in amenities to the Count. The fire was kept alight all day in his rooms, his Monsu waited on with singular civility by the steward, and Donna Laura's own woman sent down by her mistress to prepare his morning chocolate. Next day it was agreed the gentleman should ride to Valdu, but its lord being as stiff-jointed as a marionette, Donna Laura, with charming tact, begged to be of the party, and thus enabled him to attend her in her litter. The Marquess thereupon called on Odo to ride with him, and setting forth across the mountain they descended by a long defile to the half-ruined village of Valdu. Here, for the first time, Odo saw the spectacle of a neglected estate, its last penny wrung from it for the absent master's pleasure by a bailiff who was expected to extract his pay from the sale of clandestine concessions to the tenants. Riding beside the Marquess, who swore under his breath at the ravages of the undiked stream, and the sight of good arable land run wild, and choked with underbrush, The little boy obtained a precocious insight into the evils of a system which had long outlived its purpose, and the idea of feudalism was ever afterward embodied for him in his glimpse of the peasants of Valdu looking up sullenly from their work as their suzerain and protector thrust an unfamiliar painted smile between the curtains of his litter. What his grandfather thought of Valdu, to which the Count on the way home referred with smirking apologies as the mountain lair of his barbarous ancestors, was patent enough even to Odo's undeveloped perceptions. But it would have required a more experienced understanding to detect the motive that led the Marquess, scarce 2 days after their visit, to accord his daughter's hand to the Count. Odo felt a shock of dismay on learning that his beautiful mother was to become the property of an old gentleman whom he guessed to be of his grandfather's age, and whose enamored grimaces recalled the antics of her favorite monkey, and the boy's face reflected the blush of embarrassment with which Donna Laura imparted the news. But the children of that day were trained to a passive acquiescence, and had she informed him that she was to be chained in the keep on bread and water, Odo would have accepted the fact with equal philosophy. 3 weeks afterward his mother and the old count were married in the chapel of Donna's, and Donna Laura, with many tears and embraces, set out for Turin, taking her monkey, but leaving her son behind. It was not till later that Odo learned of the social usage which compelled young widows to choose between remarriage and the cloister, and his subsequent views were unconsciously tinged by the remembrance of his mother's melancholy bridal. Her departure left no traces, but were speedily repaired by the coming of spring, the sun growing warmer, and the close season putting an end to the Marquess's hunting. It was now Odo's chief pleasure to carry his books to the walled garden between the castle and the southern face of the cliff. This small enclosure, probably a survival of medieval horticulture, had along the upper ledge of its wall a grass walk commanding the flow of the stream, and an angle turret that turned one slit to the valley, the other to the garden lying below like a tranquil well of scent and brightness. Its box trees clipped to the shape of peacocks and lions, its clove pinks and simples set in a border of thrift, and a pear tree basking on its sunny wall. These pleasant spaces, which Odo had to himself save when the canonesses walked there to recite their rosary, he peopled with the knights and ladies of the Nivelle, and the fantastic beings of Pulci's epic. There walked the fay Morgana, Regulus the loyal knight, the giant Morgund, Trajan the just emperor and the proud figure of King Conrad. So that, escaping thither from the after-dinner dullness of the tapestry parlor, the boy seemed to pass from the most oppressive solitude to a world of warmth and fellowship. 1.6. Odo, who, like all neglected children, was quick to note in the demeanor of his elders any hint of a change in his own condition, had been keenly conscious of the effect produced at Donna's by the news of the Duchess of Pianura's deliverance. Guided perhaps by his mother's exclamation, he noticed an added zeal in Don Gervaso's teachings, and an unction in the manner of his aunts and grandmother, who embraced him, as though they were handling a relic, while the old Marquess, though he took his grandson Seldomer on his rides, would sit staring at him with a frowning tenderness, that once found vent in the growl or blue, but he's too good for the tonsure. All this made it clear to Odo that he was indeed meant for the church, and he learned without surprise that the following spring he was to be sent to the seminary at Asti. With a view to prepare him for this change, the canonesses suggested his attending them that year on their annual pilgrimage to the sanctuary of Europa. Thither, for every feast of the Assumption, these pious ladies traveled in their litter, and Odo had heard from them many tales of the miraculous Black Virgin who drew thousands to her shrine among the mountains. They set forth in August, 2 days before the feast, ascending through chestnut groves to the region of bare rocks, thence downward across torrents hung with white acacia, and along park-like grassy levels deep in shade. The lively air, the murmur of verdure, the perfume of mown grass in the meadows, and the sweet call of the cuckoos from every thicket, made an enchantment of the way. But Odo's pleasure redoubled when, Gaining the high road to Europa, they mingled with the long train of devotees ascending from the plain. Here were pilgrims of every condition, from the noble lady of Turin Erastai, for it was the favorite pilgrimage of the Sardinian court, attended by her physician and her Sisisbio, to the half-naked goatherd of Valsigere Saluzzo, the cheerful farmers of the Milanese, with their wives, in silver necklaces and hairpins, riding pillion on plump white asses. Sick persons traveling in close litters or carried on hand stretchers. Crippled beggars obtruding their deformities. Confraternities of hooded penitents, Franciscans, capuches and poor clares in moldy companies, jugglers, peddlers, Egyptians and sellers of drugs and amulets. From among these, as the canonesses litter jogged along, an odd figure advanced toward Odo, who had obtained leave to do the last mile of the journey on foot. This was a plump abate in tattered ecclesiastical dress, his shoes white as a miller's, and the perspiration streaking his face as he labored along in the dust. He accosted Odo in a soft, shrill voice, begging leave to walk beside the young cavalier, whom he had more than once had the honor of seeing at Pianura, and, in reply to the boy's surprised glance, added, with a swelling of the chest, and an absurd gesture of self-introduction, "But perhaps the cavalier is not too young to have heard of the illustrious Cantapresto, late primo soprano of the Ducal Theater of Pianura?" Odo being obliged to avow his ignorance, the fat creature mopped his brow, and continued with a gasp, "H, Your Excellency, what is fame? From glory to obscurity, is no farther than from one milestone to another. Not 8 years ago, Cavalier, I was followed through the streets of Pianura by a greater crowd than the Duke ever drew after him. But what then? The voice goes, it lasts no longer than the bloom of a flower, and with it goes everything. Fortune, credit, consideration, friends and parasites. Not 8 years ago, sir, would you believe me? I was supping nightly in private with the bishop, who had nearly quarreled with his late highness for carrying me off by force one evening to his casino. I was heaped with dignities and favors. All the poets in the town composed sonnets in my honor. The Marquess of Tresker fought a duel about me with the bishop's nephew, Don Serafino. I attended his lordship to Rome. I spent the villeggiatura at his villa, where I sat at play with the highest nobles in the land. Yet when my voice went, Cavalier, it was on my knees I had to beg of my heartless patron the paltry favor of the minor orders. Tears were running down the abate's cheeks, and he paused to wipe them with a corner of tattered bands. Though Odo had been bred in an abhorrence of the theater, the strange creature's aspect so pricked his compassion, that he asked him what he was now engaged in. At which Cantapresto piteously cried, "Alas, what am I not engaged in, if the occasion offers? For whatever a man's habit, he will not wear it long, if it cover an empty belly, and he that respects his calling must find food enough to continue in it. But as for me, sir, I have put a hand to every trade, from composing scenarios for the Ducal Company of Pianura, to writing satirical sonnets for noblemen that desire to pass for wits. I've a pretty taste too, in compiling almanacs, and when nothing else served I have played the public scrivener at the street corner. Nay, sir, necessity has even driven me to hold the candle in one or two transactions I would not more actively have mixed in, and it was to efface the remembrance of one of these, for my conscience is still over nice for my condition, that I set out on this laborious pilgrimage." Much of this was unintelligible to Odo, but he was moved by any mention of Pianura, and in the abate's first pause he risked the question, "Oh, you know the humpbacked boy Brutus?" His companion stared, and pursed his soft lips. "Brutus?" says he. "Brutus? Is he about the Duke's person?" "He lives in the palace," said Odo doubtfully. The fat ecclesiastic clapped a hand to his thigh. "Can it be Your Excellency has in mind the foundling boy Carlo Gamba? Does the jackanapes call himself Brutus now? He was always full of his classical allusions. Why, sir, I think I know him very well. He is even rumored to be a brother of Don Lelio Tresker's, and I believe the Duke has lately given him to the Marquess of Cerveno, for I saw him not long since in the Marquess's livery at Pontesordo.
Pontesordo?
Cried Odo. It was there I lived.
Did you indeed, Cavalier?
But I think you will have been at the Duke's manor of that name, and it was the hunting lodge on the edge of the chase that I had in mind. The Marquess uses it, I believe, as a kind of casino, though not without risk of a distemper. Indeed, there is much wonder at his frequenting it, and 'tis said he does so against the Duke's wishes. The name of Pontesordo had set Odo's memories humming like a hive of bees, and without heeding his companion's allusions he asked, "Indeed, did you see the Mamola?" The other looked his perplexity. "She's an innocent too," Odo hastened to explain. "She is Philomena's servant at the farm." The abate at this, standing still in the road, screwed up his eyelids, and protruded a relishing lip. "Yea, said he, "the girl from the farm, you say?" And he gave a chuckle. You van I, Cavalier, he cried, his soft body shaking with enjoyment. But before Odo could make a guess at his meaning, their conversation was interrupted by a sharp call from the litter. The abate at once disappeared in the crowd, and a moment later the litter had debouched on the grassy quadrangle before the outer gates of the monastery. This space was set in beech woods, amid which gleamed the white pillared chapels of the Way of the Cross, and the devouter pilgrims, dispersed beneath the trees, were ascending from one chapel to another, preparatory to entering the church. The quadrangle itself was crowded with people, and the sellers of votive offerings, in their booths roofed with acacia boughs, were driving a noisy trade in scapulars and anastice, images of the Black Virgin of Europa, silver hearts and crosses, and phials of Jordan water warranted to effect the immediate conversion of Jews and heretics. In one corner a Carmelite missionary had set up his portable pulpit, and, crucifix in hand, was exhorting the crowd. In another, an improvisator intoned canticles to the miraculous Virgin. A barefoot friar sat selling indulgences at the monastery gate, and peddlers with trays of rosaries and religious prints pushed their way among the pilgrims. Young women of less pious aspect solicited the attention of the better-dressed travelers, and jugglers, mountebanks and quacks of every description hung on the outskirts of the square. The sight speedily turned Odo's thought from his late companion, and the litter coming to a halt he was leaning forward to observe the antics of a tumbler who had spread his carpet beneath the trees, when the abate's face suddenly rose to the surface of the throng, and his hand thrust a crumpled paper between the curtains of the litter. Odo was quick-witted enough to capture this missive without attracting the notice of his grand aunts, and stealing a glance at it, he read, "Avalier, I starve. When the illustrious ladies descend, for Christ's sake beg a scudo of them for the unhappy Cantapresto." By this the litter had disengaged itself, and was moving toward the outer gates. Odo, aware of the disfavor with which the theater was viewed at Donna's, and unable to guess how far the soprano's present habit would be held to palliate the scandal of his former connection, was perplexed how to communicate his petition to the canonesses. A moment later, however, the question solved itself, for as the aunts descended at the door of the rector's lodging, the porter, running to meet them, stumbled on the black mass under the arcade, and raised the cry that here was a man dropped dead. A crowd gathering, someone called out that it was an ecclesiastic had fallen, whereat the great aunts were hurrying forward, when Odo whispered the eldest, Don Olivia, that the sick man was indeed an abate from Pianura. Don Olivia immediately bid her servants lift him into the porter's lodge, where, with the administering of spirits, the poor soprano presently revived and cast a drowning glance about the chamber. 8 years ago, illustrious ladies, he gurgled, I had nearly died one night of a surfeit of ortolans. And now it is of a surfeit of emptiness that I am perishing. The ladies at this, with exclamations of pity,
called on the lay brothers for broth and cordials, and bidding the porter inquire more particularly into the history of the unhappy ecclesiastic, hastened away with Odo to the rector's parlor. Next morning bedhams all were afoot for the procession, which the canonesses were to witness from the monastery windows. The apothecary had brought word that the abbate, whose seizure was indeed the result of hunger, was still too weak to rise, and Donna Livia, eager to open her Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.